Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. In this episode, we're going to cover the entirety of the TCL package set. That's not that many packages, but they're kind of big ones, notably the TCL scripting language. There's TK, which is the GUI set, the GUI widgets, which was developed for TCL and appears for other languages as well as sort of different in different forms, like Dekinter for Python. And there's Expect, a huge one. And then bizarrely, HFS Utils, which I know way too much about. I'm going to start out of order rather than starting with Expect and getting around to TCL and TK at the very end. It makes just more sense to start with the reason we're here, TCL and TCLX. So TCL is a scripting language. It literally stands for something like Tool Command Language or something weird like that. TCL, who cares what it stands for? It's a scripting language. TCLX, which is another package in this package set, is the are a bunch of extensions for TCL. So I'm going to treat them essentially as one package because functionally that's probably how you're going to use it. Just you're going to use TCL. And like I say, TCL is a scripting language. It is a programming language designed for really Unix sort of administration. And one of the features of TCL is that it's got a very sort of naturally, like it's developed by the same team. It's a perfect fit. TCL has TK. So if you want to script something as like a sysadmin who, you know, and you just want to run something as a daemon, or you want to run it in response to something with expect, TCL is fine. You're just going to be using TCL in a text editor. Easy. If you want to design something that either as a sysadmin or as anybody that then has a graphical user interface so that your users can interact with it, you know, users who aren't comfortable in a terminal, for instance, can still interact with this, then TCL with TK, the GUI widget set, is an easy way for you to design an application, a little application for your users pretty darn quickly and easily. Now, having said that, there are a bunch of caveats here because, I mean, that sounds great. There are all the usual caveats and some of them are almost sort of at odds with one another. So first of all, when I say it's easy, I mean, that's a matter of interpretation and opinion and experience. If you've never scripted anything in your life before, then it's still going to be, you're still going to have to learn, well, obviously TCL, but you still have to learn sort of the basics of, okay, now that I have the script part down, how do I translate those concepts into a graphical application? And it doesn't always translate one-to-one. And part of that is because GUI applications tend to be event-driven. They are expected to sit there on your desktop and idle. It doesn't go away. And then the user goes to the application and does things, and the GUI does things in response to input. Whereas a script, it's kind of in the name, it's a script. The design of the application is usually non-interactive. The idea is that you launch that command, you issue that command, and it goes and does the thing without further input from you. Those are two completely different models of working. And so even after you learn TCL, the language, you have to learn the concepts of GUI, sort of GUI interaction and GUI design. So that's one big caveat, or maybe two wrapped into one. Another caveat is that these applications that you're going to be designing, they're going to be ugly. Now, there's a caveat to the caveat. There are themes that you can use to make the applications less ugly, but it'll still kind of be ugly. It's not going to be like, if you're looking at the pinnacle of graphical application design where everything is scalable and can adapt quickly to whatever screen it's put on and can easily scale up for accessibility, like literally like get larger, you know, for accessibility and all of those other things. Like a lot of those, a lot of the, you know, just basic like concepts that you would expect from like a web page with fairly rudimentary CSS. That's not what TK is. It is not designed for sort of the modern, like it was designed and continues to pretty much to be it expects there's just one output device. Like there's one kind of output and it is a screen and that is all. And the screen is always going to be generally the same size. And if people start messing around too much with that interface, it's probably going to show. It'll look weird. Like all your buttons will be up in the upper left-hand corner, even though the application has been made full screen. It's really weird. There are some things that you can do to mitigate that a little bit. Like I say, there are also theme files to make it look not like it was designed in like 1994. But you do need to probably temper your expectations when going into TCL TK. It is not necessarily the magical a magic wand of just sudden beautiful GUI design. It's actually quite a lot of work to get it to look passable to a modern computer user, and even then you only have so many options. You know, I mean, you only have the widgets that TK provides. So I think what I'm trying to say is that arguably there are better ways to end up with a quick GUI application. One of those ways could be Python with like Tkinter or with PyCute or PySide, whatever we're using these days. There's certainly Java, which arguably is more complex than TCL scripting, but then there's Groovy. There are lots of options out there. So I'm just not sure that TCL and TK, I don't know where it sits in the world right now. It might sit perfectly for your use case, though, you know, and that's the thing. Like, it's not a bad little scripting language. I mean, not that I use it every day myself, but I mean, it's very capable, and it is cool to see just how easy it is to hook TCL into TK for that GUI experience. But I mean, then again, there's Zenity as well, just for Bash. So yeah, there are lots of other options out there is my point. And TCL, while pretty neat, I don't want to make it sound like it is something of out of this world. It is still a scripting language. It has a rudimentary GUI set, and if you want it to be more than that, then it does require more work to get it to where you want it to be. And realistically, that also means that then distributing it is going to be a little bit more work, because now you're not just sending a script file to a person and saying run that. Now you have to bundle those theme files along with it or whatever. So, you know, the more you want from a thing, whether it's TCL or Python GUIs or anything, the more complex it is on your end to set that up for the user you're designing something to be simple for. Okay, so I think those are most of the caveats that leapt to mind as I was exploring TCL. Talking about TCL, it's a programming language. So approaching TCL is not any different than approaching any other programming language, scripting language, whatever we're calling them. And to me, that approach can be summed up in roughly 5 steps. One is syntax, meaning that if you want to know how to write in a programming language, one of the early things you want to understand are the syntax rules of the language. Like, what are the things that you might end up doing that could sort of break the language from running? Python, for instance, uses the indentation. If you get the indentation wrong, then Python doesn't run. Lua uses keywords to end a loop or a statement. Java and C and C++ use curly braces to define scope. So that kind of thing. Two, you need to know about the built-in commands or keywords that you have available to you, and the concepts of your conditionals. This is generally easier than it sounds. Like, you think, oh my gosh, learning all the different built-in keywords of a programming language, that's literally like learning a language. But not, you might be surprised. Like, even C, which is not considered a simple language, I mean, it is considered a simple language, but it's not considered an easy language. Even C only has like 32 keywords. Like, that's all. Once you learn 32 words, then you know C, basically. I mean, plus its syntax requirements and so on. But yeah, I mean, it isn't as much as you might think. And certainly if you've programmed in some other language, then there are often quick equivalents that you learn, and then you don't have to think about them anymore. So for instance, if you wanted to write a TCL script to print the message hello world, you might open a file called hello.tcl, and then you could put the word puts, P-U-T-S, quote, hello space world, close quote, save that file, and then run the file with tclsh.hello.tcl, and then you get the output hello world. You've just done the obligatory first TCL or first programming language thing. So puts is like print in a lot of other languages, or system out or whatever. So puts, that's that. Set, that's how you set a variable, and so on. So that's the second thing that I try to approach a language with. First, syntax. Then the second is the built-in variables, or rather built-in keywords. The next thing that you want to understand are data types. What kind of data types do you have available to you? TCL has several: string, int, that sort of thing. For operators and parsers, you want to know what you have available to you when you need to compare data to some other data, whether it's mathematical data or string data or whatever. And then finally, functions. Like, how do you create a statement, or a process rather, within this language, and then reuse that process. And again, there are different ways of doing that. Some are functional programming languages that really rely on just functions. Others are object oriented and have concepts of classes, and others kind of take a hybrid approach where, yes, you can have functions and you can have something that you can then sort of use as a template, which basically is a class. So it kind of depends on the language. The TCL keywords, I didn't count them all, but they're listed quite tidily in the documentation of TCL. If you go to tcl.tk/man/tcl8.6/tclcmd/contents.htm. I'll put that in the show notes. I don't know. First glance, let's call it 50. Let's say that there are 50 keywords. And these, some of them are relatively self-explanatory, arguably. Like I say, puts and set for printing and setting a variable, respectively. String, int, catch, for, or rather, for and for each, and so on. So some of them are pretty self-explanatory. Other, read, that's another one. Some of them may be a little bit less so, like EXPR, what does that mean? Exec, what does that mean? Why is that important? So, you know, it kind of depends on your experience and where you're coming from, but there they are. They're listed. They're all hyperlinked to something that explains how they work, at least to some degree. I mean, if you're totally new to programming, again, that the explanations in this very developer-centric section of the documentation may not make total sense at first, but there is a really good, like, beginner level tutorial on tcl.tk. So if you go to tcl.tk/man/tcl8.5, I don't think the dot release really makes that big of a difference, /tutorial/, I guess that'll probably get you there, tutorial. And again, I'll put the link in the show note. It's a fine little step-by-step introduction to the language, accounting for differences in learning styles. This may or may not be like the exact right introduction to TCL that everyone requires or that everyone would need to get really started. And arguably, I don't know that TCL is the language to start with. You know, like, if you look at it written, eventually you might think, yeah, there are easier languages that a new programmer might find, if not easier, maybe just a little easier to understand. So let's step through a little program here with TCL. Just open up a document called dice.tcl in Emacs. That's the obvious first application for me is a dice roller. That just seems like a good way to get input and output, or not necessarily input, but anyway, to get output and then to experiment around with functions like random number generation and so on. So I'll start this document pretty simply, and I'll just put, let's do a puts quote, rolling the dice, dot, 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 close quote. So that's just like the Hello World application. It's just going to print something out. What we need to do now is actually roll some dice or some virtual dice. And for that, we can use command or I guess it's command. I don't know if it's command. Evaluation and substitution. This is lesson 3 in the tutorial. And that establishes that in TCL, you can get the result of a command within TCL by surrounding that command with square brackets. So to begin with, we could do something like set dice. So we're creating a variable called dice now, and then square bracket. And now we need a number. So that's going to be, we want a random number, right? Because that's what a dice does. So how can we get a random number? Well, go back to the keyword page of TCL, look around, see if there's any kind of math-related function that we might be able to use to obtain just a random number, or even something else. Like, I've gotten random numbers for some projects from unexpected sources, like parsing, some kind of random data, and then counting up how many vowels I have within a couple of seconds, or something like that. So there are usually ways to get some kind of unexpected, if not truly random, result. Okay, so I'm not really seeing anything called like random or rand or rand num or anything like that, but there are a bunch of math functions apparently in a keyword called math func. So I'm going to click on that and see if that provides any more information. So apparently within math func, those are the mathematical functions for TCL expressions. Apparently there are several. There's ABS, probably for an absolute value, I would think. A sine, a cos, so probably cosine and sine, which, you know, that could be an interesting way to screw up some numbers and get something unexpected. But then we'd have to get like some kind of seed from the user. And then eventually you get down to this section here where, yep, there's a rand function. So I'm going to click on rand, and it says that, ooh, I've scrolled away from rand. Darn it. Okay, here we go. Returns a pseudo-random floating point value in the range parentheses 0 comma 1. The generator algorithm is a simple linear generator that is not cryptographically secure. Yeah, I don't care about that right now. Good to know, but not important to my use case. Okay, so apparently rand parentheses some number comma some number should, I guess, provide a result. So I'm going to do rand parentheses let's do 1, 20, close parentheses, close square bracket. And then as my final line, I'll do a puts space. And then how do we call a variable? How do we get the variable, the value back out of a variable? Eventually, if you look through the tutorial, it covers variables. I don't actually remember where. I would have thought it was pretty early on, but I'm not actually seeing it. But anyway, it's a dollar sign. So you do a $dice, because I created a set dice variable. So do that, and then we'll try it out. So in a terminal, I'm going to do tclsh.slash/dice.tcl. It says rolling the dice, and then it says invalid command name rand (1,20). So that's, I must have misread how that function works. So I'm going to go back to that page of the math functions and see what I missed. Synopsis. Okay, so :\tcl:\math func:\rand with no arguments listed after it. So apparently, even though the description of it seems to suggest that the values are going to be that you encapsulate the values between parentheses, that was actually just the author of the document describing sort of what you were going to get. I don't know why that notation was used. That seems misleading to me. Okay, so set dice, square bracket, rand, (\). Now that'll work, but it'll give us back a floating point number. So tclsh.slash/dice.tcl, rolling the dice. No, it doesn't work. It says it's an invalid command name. Okay, maybe that's because it's a function. So it's a function of mathfunk. So maybe if I replace rand, or rather prepend rand with mathfunk.rand, (\), still in the square brackets. Let's try that. No, that fails as well. Okay, so back to the tutorial here. Turns out that one of the lessons in the tutorial describes something called getting the result of a command math 101, and it says that you must use, in order to sort of process math, you're defining it as an expression, EXPR, which in the command list, or the keyword list rather, is provided as an expression, as a keyword, and it says that it evaluates an expression. Mathfunk, for whatever reason, just says it's mathematical functions. So I don't really understand exactly from this documentation how you're meant to differentiate EXPR from mathfunk, but it seems that if I write EXPR, curly brace, rand, (\), close curly brace, close square bracket, then potentially that works, and it does. So that says rolling the dice, and then it puts a floating point number 0.552120745439138 6. So we got a random number. That's the takeaway. That's the exciting thing. So the expression that we have so far to get a random number for my 20-sided dice roller here is set space dice space square bracket EXPR curly brace rand (\) curly brace square bracket. As I say, I don't know that this is one of those languages that you're going to look at and just think, yeah, I get what's happening here, especially if you're at all a vaguely new programmer. That just, to me, that's not, you know, when people say, oh, this is such a beautiful programming language about this or that, I don't think anyone would accuse this of being a beautiful programming language. Maybe they would. Maybe this first pass is just not showing me the beauty in it, but I don't know. That expression looks pretty rough to me. Okay, so because the random number function only provides a floating point number between 0 and 1, in order to get something larger, I have to multiply the result by something that I want. So I'm going to multiply it. If I want a 20-sided dice, you might think to multiply it by a 20. And indeed, that would sort of work. I mean, that would give me results like 18.59, but then on the low end, which I just happened to have just gotten my second try, I have 0.43. So what I really want to do is multiply this by 19 and then add 1 to the results. And that'll make sure that I never get a 0. I just get things like 18, 13, 5, 18, 10, and eventually I would potentially see a 1 eventually, or a 20. Not for a while, though. I keep, I keep doing this, and oh well, okay. But eventually that would happen. So to get rid of the points after that initial number, you can think of doing lots of different, or at least two different things that I can think of. Either just tell puts somehow to truncate the output after, you know, at the decimal point and everything to the right of that. That would give us just the whole number. What I'm going to do, though, is just divorce it from the floating point or convert it from the floating point. And to do that, there is a function somewhere in here, int, or a keyword rather, int, which I'm assuming is another math func, actually. Yes, it is. So int, listed under math func, computes the integer part of the, no wait, that's different. But yeah, the int provide, there, here it is. The argument may be any numeric value, the integer part of arg is determined, and then the low order bits of that integer value up the machine words, whatever. Okay, so the point is that it's going to give me an integer rather than a floating point. So kind of a little bit of a type conversion maybe, or a calculation. I don't know. So I'm going to do within my expression, curly brace, int, parentheses, rand, parentheses, times 19 plus 1, close parentheses, close curly brace, close square bracket. And then puts dice on the next line. And there we go. I've rolled a 1, finally. And there's a 2, bizarrely, 17, okay, there we go, 15, 5, 11, 8, 13, yeah, and that's working. And there are some built-in arguments as well, or I guess parameters, whatever, arg0 and argv, just like in, I don't know, lots of programming languages. So in other words, you can provide input when you issue, you know, when you launch the script, and that input is processed as part of the script. So it's just a built-in feature of TCL, just like, I guess, probably all programming languages. Maybe not all. It's never all, right? But I mean, certainly modern programming languages generally expect to be launched from some kind of terminal or command line. And there's an awareness between that command line and the programming language of arguments and parameters that you have passed along with that command. To access that in TCL, it is, as I say, argv, it's a very common notation for that argument value. So if I just put, for instance, let's do, instead of puts rolling the dice, let's do rolling $ argv sided dice. I don't know if that's going to work, because I don't know how quoting works. Yes, it does work. Okay, so if I do TCL sh space dot slash dice dot TCL and then space 20, for instance, then I have rolling 20-sided dice. It's not grammatically correct, because there really should be a dash between argv and sided, but I don't want to put a dash and screw up the variable name, so I'm just going to, I guess I could do d dollar sign argv. Will that work? That'll work. Okay, so I'm doing rolling a d, as in dice or d, dollar sign argv. And so then the message when I roll this dice is rolling a d20, for instance. Now that is if I am rolling a d20. What really needs to happen here, though, is that I need to do a set, maybe sides equals dollar sign arg, oh, sorry. So set sides, not equals, square bracket, expr, curly brace, that's argv minus 1. Close curly brace, close square bracket. And then in my set dice expression, I need to do expression int rand times, not 19, but times sides. And then still add 1. I'm always going to add 1 because I need to eliminate the 0 possibility as a result. and then puts dice. Let's see if that works. It feels logically correct to me. Okay, so it says rolling a d20, and I got a 16, I got a 10, I got a 16, got a 4, got a 7, got a 5, 19, 9, and so on. Okay, but now let's do tclsh space dot slash dice dot tcl 6. So this is a 6-sided dice. And there's a 1, coincidentally. And there's a 6. Well, that's a handy instant demonstration of the range. 1 and 2 and 2. Still haven't gotten a 3 or a 4. There's a 4, there's a 5. Okay. So that seems to be working, and I can change it pretty much at will just by typing in how many sides for my dice I want. D12, D4, D8, it doesn't matter. So that's a really simple, what is this, a four line script for TCL that establishes, that tells you what it's doing, establishes the sides of the, you know, gets a random number, modifies that random number based on some input from you during when you issue the command, and then gives you the results. What it doesn't do is error out if you, or error gracefully if you fail to give it a number of sides, then it just, it fails miserably. And, you know, I could do something like, if I can detect that argv is empty, then I could set sides to some default value, but I'm not going to do that right now because I think you kind of get the idea here. I wouldn't accuse it of being, you know, really similar to Bash. I wouldn't accuse it to being similar to Perl. It is its own thing. Maybe to its detriment. I mean, it's got some confusing syntax, frankly, in my opinion. To create a function, you use the proc keyword. That's not confusing. That's just, I mean, it's, again, it's not as obvious as func or function, just English words that make, like, that describe exactly what you're doing. But anyway, so proc space some name of your function, and then for the parameters of that function, strangely, it's curly brace. And so it's curly brace, you know, my variable or my input, whatever, close curly brace. And then for the scope of the function, it's also a curly brace, which that seems strange to me. I mean, it's fine, it works once you're used to it, but it strikes me as odd to use the, you know, like, especially since all the other languages out there use parentheses for the parameters. It just seems like that would be the sort of the obvious conventional thing to do. So that strikes me as a little bit strange. The whole convention of square brackets and the curly braces and the parentheses, and I'm not 100% sure when to use one or the other, which, I mean, doesn't surprise me. I've used TCL for, like, you know, a day. So, I mean, it's not surprising that I would be confused. It's just, from just trying to figure it out and trying to understand it perspective, I feel like that's, there's a little bit of an opportunity for a good amount of confusion. So I don't know. In other words, I don't think anyone's going to accuse TCL of being necessarily a beautiful language, quote unquote beautiful. I don't know if people would say it was ugly or you know, unfathomable. It's not like Lisp, but it's. I think it's got a little bit of maybe more of a curve, learning curve, than it maybe necessarily would need to have. But like I say, one of the big selling points I think for TCL is that GUI, that tight integration with the TK GUI widget set. And I mean, it's no exaggeration to say that people absolutely, nobody has ever accused TK of being a beautiful GUI widget set. Admittedly, there are different tastes in this world, and if you have kind of a pining for the very retro Unix, you know, early like GTK 1.1 or 0. something look, then maybe you're the exception. Maybe you do think TK is quaint and beautiful, whatever. But I don't think most people would accuse it of being that, but it is themable, and a user named RDBend on GitHub has a couple of different themes. There's a Forest TTK theme, there's Azure theme, and then one other that I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's on this GitHub page. So if you clone the project github.com/rdbend, that's RDBENDE, E at the end, /forest-ttk-theme.git, then you get a little folder full of these theming files. For simplicity, I'm going to work in this directory because that way I don't have to store, you know, I don't have to reference, change the paths and things like that. I'll just create a hello.tcl here, I guess, in Emacs, and then I'm gonna do what the sample text tells me to do in the theming file, which is first package space require space tk with a capital T tk space 8.6. Now that happens to be the version, I forgot to launch Emacs with an ampersand. There we go. That happens to be, if you look in varlog packages, actually, no, yeah, tk-8.6.12. So we're right there with the TK project on Slackware. So package require TK 8.6. Cool. And then source space quote forest-dark.tcl close quote. Now that is the file that has all the, well, that has the function for the theme. So if you do a less on forest-dark.tcl, it's a good, like, I don't know, maybe 80 lines of TCL code if you need to see it. And it's good stuff. I mean, it's stuff by someone who clearly knows what they're doing. And it includes a function proc load images, and that takes in the image dir, which happens to be forest-dark. That's the folder. If you look in forest-dark, that's got a bunch of PNGs in it. So that's where all the theming, all the images that lend the theme exist. That function modifies, you know, a bunch of the settings within TTK. TTK colon colon style theme create forest-dark parent default settings TTK style configure. So all that code is in there. Like I say, it's a good 80 lines. And so when you source it into your document, obviously you're just bringing, just like in Bash, you're bringing all those that function into your code. Of course, the path normally wouldn't be the current directory, and so you would have to adjust the path. Probably that it would be either within your project directory or on the system, and that means that if you expect that theme to be on the system, then when you're distributing your code, you're probably going to need to configure the theme as well. So that's just one level of complexity that is now added to TCLTK. Again, you don't have to use a theme. You could just use TCL and TK and just assume that if someone has TCL installed, then they have TK and you're good to go. And that's probably a realistic expectation. But if you want it to look kind of modern, then I don't know. I think realistically you're going to be using a theme. So then we need to set the theme, which is TTK colon colon style space theme space use space forest-dark. And we know that that's the name because in the file itself, in the forest-dark.tcl theme file, there's that process or that function, the proc load images, or rather, yeah, and it says TTK colon colon style theme create forest-dark. So there you go, there's the name. So we're setting our theme to that theme that we've just sourced. Okay, so now you want GUI elements, right? So these are from within TCL. You have to establish which namespace you are referencing, and or at least you should. I have seen sample code that doesn't use the TTK colon colon in front of everything, and I think it does appear to work. I don't exactly know why it works. I mean, I feel like, because I haven't declared TTK, but maybe when you do the package command or keyword require TK 8.6, that just brings in that namespace. And so you're referencing it even without referencing it. If there's no conflict, maybe, I don't know. TTK colon colon button, B-U-T-T-O-N, space dot button, space dash text, quote, let's do hello world, close quote, pack space dot button dash pad Y 20. So as you can tell, there's some hard coding of the look of the of where this button goes. We've just padded the on the Y axis 20 pixels. Okay, so now I'm gonna go back out to my terminal. I'm gonna do tlc tclsh. What did I call this thing? Hello.tcl? Yes. Launch that, and sure enough, there's a window. It's darkly themed. It has a very nice little gray button sort of in the middle of the window, and the words Hello World appear on the button. Now, if I make this window a lot larger, actually it's behaving a lot better than I remembered the sample applications that I've looked at behave. The button is actually staying in the center of the window, which I swear I've used some of the sample applications that don't do that. So that's quite nice. That's not as bad as I remembered, to be honest. It does stay, I mean, like I say, it is hard-coded 20 pixels from the top. So, like, you know, you've got some flexibility in one direction, but not in the other. But, I mean, then again, maybe if we didn't define that, maybe there are different ways to do to set that, because obviously we didn't set it for the X axis, and that's behaving pretty well. No, that doesn't work. If I just remove the pack dot button, that doesn't work. So let's try packing the button without the dash pad Y and see what happens. Yeah, that works. Okay, cool. And that's just, now the button is just hugging the top, the very top. So obviously there's some, there's a bit of a grid hierarchy here, and I think we could play around. I've seen grid commands where you can kind of divide up your window space and place different elements into it. So actually that's a lot nicer. Like, looking at it themed, even I've seen it themed. I was messing around with these themes earlier, and I don't know if it's just that I didn't try enough applications, or if this theme is just really, really nice, but this actually looks really good. This is kind of making me think twice about TK again, which, I mean, admittedly, it's already the theme, it really does make you kind of, yeah, think twice about any kind of complaint about TK, because, I mean, it looks nice. It looks really, really slick. Yeah, so that's not bad. So the next thing, I mean, so the button says Hello World, you click it and nothing happens. So in GUI applications, you have to somehow connect an event with an action. And in TK, that's really simple to do, at least on a rudimentary level. I don't know how to connect several events to some action. I don't know. I've never done that before. But a simple implementation of, like, I want someone to click a button and then do a thing, or and then my application does a thing. Instead of just doing TTK colon colon button dot button dash text hello world, you put at the end of that statement dash command. And then in curly braces, you put the command that you want TK, or TCL, I guess, to execute. So, for instance, just as a proof of concept, you could do dash command, curly brace, puts, quote, hello world, close quote, curly brace. That's a print statement. It is not going to appear in the TK widget. This is a TCL command, puts is. So that's not going to really affect the TK widget. So I'm going to go back out to my terminal, tclsh.hellotcl. Here's my little window again with a hello world. I click the button, and if I look in the terminal, there's a message for me, hello world. So that's a simple connection from the user sending a signal and TK picking that up and then doing something in response. Like, when the button is clicked, we issue this command. It doesn't have to be just a command, though. It could be something like a function that's far more complex than just putting hello world to standard out. So for instance, I mean, this isn't going to be far more complex, but it'll be a little bit more. Let's create a, well, okay, so we'll do dash command, curly brace, my response, close curly brace. My response doesn't exist. That's just the, off the top of my head, function name I'm going to create. So now, at the end of this file, I'll create a new function. So proc, proc space, my response, curly brace, because there are no parameters required here, and then curly brace for the scope of the function, and we'll do label. This actually, TTK colon colon label. Although it does work with just label, that's what I'm saying about the namespace. It just seems to just be there, whether you define it or not. Space.status-text, quote, right back at you, close quote. And then at the end, I'm going to do a pack space.status. Oh, and close the curly brace to close that function. Okay, launch this again. Now I've got my same old little tiny application here, hello world. If I click that, now there's a new label in the GUI that says right back at you. If I click it twice, I get a bunch of errors because the status already exists. So that's fun. But of course there's more. You can juggle data all over the place. So let's give this a little bit more interactivity. Yeah, it's got a button, but the button doesn't do all that much. So I'm going to add an entry field, the text entry field. TTK, this is just right after pack.button pad y20. I'm going to do TTK colon colon entry space dot entry. I guess I could call it message. Let's call it message. Dot message space dash width. Let's do maybe 12. That ought to be enough for anybody. Space dash text variable, my message, with a capital M and a capital M. My message, camel casing here. I don't know if that's the convention for TCL, but that's what I'm doing. Space dash validate space all. That, I believe, that makes sure that there's a value there. I could be wrong about what it's doing, but that's what I think it does. And then I'm going to do pack dot, what did I call it, dot message. That's the name of this entry field. And then I'm going to go a step farther and say focus space dot message, so that when I open this application, the focus of the app, of you know, the user's cursor, the focus is on dot message, which is the entry field, the text entry field that I've just created. Okay, let's try that out. Yep, that works. I've got a button that says hello world up at the top, and then an entry field at the bottom of the window. Okay, that's not super fancy, but let's try to do maybe something fancier with that button. So instead of just having the button put hello world into standard out or at the bottom of the window as a status, let's make it repeat what we put type in. So I'm going to do dash command curly brace. This is, you know, so TTK colon colon button space dot button, the name of the button, dash text, quote, hello world. Or maybe, you know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to change it to echo, quote, echo, close quote, space dash command curly brace my response space, and this is a little bit confusing, dollar sign my message close curly brace. I say that's confusing because in my mind, and for most of, you know, for several minutes as I was trying to get that to work originally, I was trying to put it into parentheses, and then I thought no, we don't use parentheses here for that, we use curly braces. So I put it into curly brace. Turns out you don't do that at all. It's sort of as if though you're just on a terminal, on a command line. You just give the command, which in this case is my response, which is of course the function that I've created. So it's a personal little command, and then space, and then the argument or the parameter or parameters. So I'm saying dollar sign my message. Now my function, my response, doesn't know that I'm going to give it my message. So I need to go change that. I'm going to go down to my function, proc my response, curly brace, well, instead of just curly brace, I'm going to write my message in there. So now it knows to expect data. It knows to expect a parameter. And in this function, I want to do something with this message. So I'm going to, instead of TTK, instead of the label creating a status message called hello world or right back at you, is going to be TTK colon colon label space dot status dash tech or space dash text space quote dollar sign my message close quote and then pack status. and I'll run this. So here it is. I've got this little window. It says echo in a button, and there's an entry field. I'll click echo, and I get an annoying little message saying there's no such variable. So I guess that's not what validate does. I don't know what validate does. I read it in an article and started using it, and now I don't know what it means. So echo dollar sign or echo text entry. That's what it is. Text entry field. So I'll write something different. How about I like penguins, and then click echo. And now I see I like penguins at the bottom of the window. So it did indeed echo. If I click on it twice, I still get that error message. I'm not going to solve that in this episode, by the way. There are ways to destroy data and to sort of tell, well, or I could clear the entry field. There are options, but I'm not going to do any of those. What I am going to do, though, just for my own convenience, because I intend to use this application on a daily basis for you know, many, many years from now, I'm going to do a bind space all space less than symbol return greater than symbol. So I'm binding the return key on my keyboard to curly brace dot, what did I call my button? I called it button. That's handy. Dot button space invoke close curly brace. So bind all return curly brace dot button invoke close curly brace. And that's just somewhere in the body of the script. Right above the function, really. I don't think it matters all that much. I mean, I think it might have to happen before button, or, you know, after button exists. I could try it, but I'm not going to. Run it, and now if I put in Linux is great, and then hit return, it echoes Linux is great at the bottom of the window. So you kind of get a feel for how, I guess I want to kind of say flexible TK with TCL is, and I don't know that that's, like, flexible, but I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that it feels a lot like the simplicity of something like Zenity, but it's got like the entirety of TCL behind it and all the, you know, it's got this super easy connect, you know, the signals and connections that you can create from your widgets to functions that then maybe create other widgets or alter widgets. I mean, I could alter a widget too. I could reset the text of the button or something like that. So it's a pretty slick little marriage between TCL and TK. And I have to assume that that must be one of the big selling points of TCL, or I should say it must have been one of the big selling points. I mean, I don't know how long Zenity has been around or little interfaces like that, but this just seems really easy. And just imagine, I mean, if you're a sysadmin or something, and there's just one little thing on the desktops that you need people to be able to do that for whatever reason, they don't normally, you know, there's no application for this function. And there are a dozen of things like that that could come up. Maybe you want someone to just initiate. All you want them to do is click OK to a prompt that asks them if they're ready to initiate a big backup of their system or something. And because you've strung together a bunch of commands to do your backup process, there is no prompt for that. There's nothing doing that. And so you can just whip up a quick confirmation dialogue with TCL and TK, and suddenly that your normal everyday desktop user has something to click and it's done. And you could go so far with this. I mean, you want to write a quick, I don't know, batch image converter, but you know that your user is not going to be able to go to a terminal, navigate to the correct folder, and then type in the command correctly. You know, I mean, and frankly, that is a lot to ask of really anybody. Like, why do they have to do that? Well, they don't. Maybe you create a TCL script with a TK front end, and all they have to do is maybe select the directory where the images are and then click OK, and then they wait a couple of moments and go back to that directory in their file manager, and suddenly there's, you know, all those images have been converted to WebP or JPEG or they've been resized or whatever. So, I mean, the potential, because you do have, like with TCL, you have pretty simple access to the rest of your system with the exec command. You can drop down essentially to a subshell and run whatever command you want. Really, really powerful and really, really just so easy, especially with the themes. I mean, this the theming has just sold me on this. I mean, it looks so nice. It's just, it doesn't look like something that you just kind of threw together at the last minute, because someone spent a lot of time re-theming it, obviously, so it isn't something that you just threw together. It's very nice. I'm very impressed. Now, I admit that went on a lot longer than I'd kind of anticipated. I got maybe carried away with just kind of exploring TCL and TK, but I mean, it's I think it's worth it. I think it's worth the extra time spent on it, because I mean, it is really cool. You should check it out if you're looking, you know, if you're looking, if you have a need for something like that. Quite possibly you don't, or you do, and there are lots of other solutions available. Like I said, Python with some kind of simple GUI front end, Zenity with a Bash back end, Perl with a GTK front end. I think that still exists. Java, so makes everything so easy. There are just so many options these days that maybe TCL, TK, maybe that isn't right for you. But I think there are probably still some really interesting use cases out there that would really benefit from this kind of thing. But we have to move on. So the next package, and there's only two left at this point. There's Expect and, or within TCL, I mean, there's Expect and HFS Utils. Both of those are here because they are linked against libTCL. So if you do a less on user bin Expect, or actually you should really do a file on Expect, you'll see that it's a binary. It's an ELF binary. It is not like a TCL script or anything. But if you do an LDD on user bin expect, you do see that it's linked against libTCL 8.6. Expect, it's a little application that you can run and sort of train, if you will, or I guess script is the better term for it. But you can script expect to, as its name implies, expect output on in a terminal, and then to take action based on that output. The output must be known to you, and it's only going to do what you proscribe. So it's a simple little application, but that's what it is built to do. So if you have an application that you know the sequence of events, you know how this is going to go, then you can use expect to respond to prompts for you. And a really, really great example of this is included in the package. It is called makePassword.expect. That's stored in user bin, but it is actually technically it's a shell script, but it drops into TCLSH pretty quickly. I don't exactly know why it's listed as a shell script, but anyway, it's there. And the first line, or the first line after we get into the TCLSH stuff, is package require expect. So we're importing a bunch of functions from expect, and then make password, as it calls itself, Slackware calls it make password dot expect, because there's already an mk password command, but make password, it makes a password if the username is given, and then sets it. And you can read through the code, it's not, I guess it's almost probably 120 lines, let's say. Without doing a WC, I'm just guessing. But it is pretty nice. It's pretty cool to look at. There's some cool little concepts in it, like passwords that sort of distribute evenly the characters between the left hand and the right hand on a standard QWERTY keyboard, not a Dvorak keyboard, as I will note. But it's a cool command, and you can run it. Like, I have a fake user on here called Gort, so I'm going to do a user bin make password dot expect Gort. And I can't do that. How about if I do it with sudo powers? There we go. And it spits out a new password, EL76, GORP. And if I do an SU-GORT and type in what I think the password was, bogus123, that fails. But if I do that again and type in this new password that I've been given by make password expect, that works. Now I am Gort. Who am I? Gort. So it's an expect script that is calling an executable that exists, and then running through all the prompts, like the type your password again. It's also generating the password, obviously, but you know, like normally when you're doing a password, it asks you to type the password and then type it again. And as someone online pointed out, that I was reading up on this stuff, you know, that kind of thing is fine to do once or twice or, you know, a couple of times a day or a couple of times a week. But I mean, if you have to do it for a bunch of new users, then you don't want to have to do that. You could script make expect.expect to, you could script make password.expect, that's what I meant to say, to cycle through the users on the system and set passwords and probably ideally dump those passwords out for you so that you know what they are or whatever. And that's just an example script. There's a bunch more in /var /log/packages/expect. There's a bunch of sample commands. Not all of them work as you would hope for them to work. Cryptdir and decryptdir do not work. In fact, be very careful with those. They, I wouldn't say they were destructive, but they are tricky. Cryptdir does encrypt a file. I can get it to encrypt a file. Its name is a little misleading to cryptdir. It actually encrypts the contents of the directory. It doesn't encrypt the directory. So that confused me for a while. And then it appears to work. It does not fail. It fails, but it's not telling you it fails. It appears to work. It gives you an encrypted file of the thing that you've asked it to encrypt, and then you decrypt it and it's an empty file. So do be careful with that one. Like, don't encrypt your file and then throw the thing away and then decrypt it, because you've lost your data if you do. So be careful with that one, or just don't try it. I don't know. It clearly is broken. There's a bunch of samples though in here. Pass mass, you can do a bunch of passwords at the same time. Lots of things to take a look at. There's even TK password, weather. That's a fun one, except it doesn't break. That also is broken. It doesn't work. But I like what it's supposed to do. You can tell what it's supposed to do. And it telnets to Weather Underground and gets the forecast. Except, as I said, it doesn't work. So I guess probably actually not its fault. Probably the telnet connection to Weather Underground is not accessible as it once was. So that's expect. It's a cool command, but you do, I mean, it does require you to script what you want expect to do in response to a known set of events. So here's a simple example of how to actually use that. So I'm going to do I'll do Emacs hello.sh first of all, and that's just going to be a simple shebang user bin env bash. And we'll do echo quote, what is your name, close quote, and then I'll do a read response, or how about RESP for short, and then I'll do echo hello space $RESP. That ought to work. I'll drop down back to my shell, execute that. What is your name? Klaatu. Hello, Klaatu. Okay, perfect. So that's the application, that's the imaginary application that has an expected output, right? We know what the prompt is going to be, and we understand how to get past that prompt. So now let's create an expect script to deal with that. So we'll do Emacs dealer.exp as in expect, and as the first line, I'm going to do another shebang, which is going to be user bin expect. And the first thing that you want to do in probably most expect scripts is to launch the script that you want to respond to. And this is called spawning. So spawn, S-P-A-W-N space. In this case, I'm just going to say /hello.sh. It'll be interesting to see. I think that has to be executable. So, and it's not right now. So it'll be interesting to see whether I remember to do that. So we know exactly what to expect. And very logically, the keyword to define what is expected is the word expect, and then what you expect to see. Now, how you define that is up to you. I know, because I wrote the script that I'm responding to, that the exact phrase is what is your name. But I have noticed in a lot of scripts, they tend to be a little bit less precise. So for instance, I should be able to do a quote asterisk for a wild card, and then actually I don't even have to do the asterisk now that I'm thinking about it. So I know that your name, the phrase your name, your space name, is in that key, in that first prompt. So I think I'm just going to put your name. Now that could be dangerous if this was a script, a very complex script that I was responding to, or a complex application that might have the phrase your name. What is your name? Type your name again. I don't know, whatever. Then I would, well, actually that would be the same response, but still, you want to be as precise as you need to be for your expect script to sort of keep up with the application you are trying to respond to. And in this case, I think that is good enough. Well, now what we want expect to do is do a send action, S-E-N-D. So I'm going to do send space dash dash quote clatu backslash r close quote, backslash r being that that text entry. And then I'm going to do expect EOF to close this out. So I'm going to save that, and then I'm going to try to do expect dot slash dealer dot exp and see what happens. I think it'll fail. Yeah, it does. Okay, cool. So I'm gonna chmod plus x my hello dot sh and then do that again, expect dot slash dealer dot exp. And so I get, what is your name? Klaatu, hello Klaatu, and then that's it. Then expect exits. So that is exactly what I would expect, right? So expect, that's what I want. So I can change this just to make things more exciting. Send dash dash, how about Gort instead of Klaatu, and see what happens. Expect, what is your name? Gort, hello Gort. Yeah, so it's working as I would want it to work. And that's really all there is to it. I mean, there's more to it, but I mean, that's the getting started with expect process. It's very nice and simple. It's refreshingly simple. I'm trying to say that in like a good way. Final package, HFS utils. What is it? Well, it's a set of utilities for the HFS file system, which is the I guess historical file system of Apple Macs. They don't use HFS, I think, at all anymore. They might use HFS Plus as an option, but I think if memory serves, they've come up with a completely different, I could be wrong about that, but I think they've come up with a different one since all of this stuff. But this, I mean, it's important to note that HFS and HFS Plus are different file systems, but this is a collection of tools that is linked against libtcl that can possibly help you with an HFS volume. Specifically, there's HFSCK, so you can do a file system check against an HFS file system, which is really important. It's a journaled file system, I think, or is that only HFS Plus? I'm not sure. I feel like it's a journaled file system, one of either HFS or HFS Plus R. And so, you know, like in theory, total failure on a file system, sort of software-based level, should not happen often. I mean, hardware failure is a different question, but obviously software doesn't have any control over that. But HFS or HFSCK is just like FSCK, except it's for HFS volumes. There's HFSSH, which is the, it's a TCL interpreter, like TCLSH, but it has extensions to support really manipulating the HFS file system. So you can do things like HFS mount, HFS make part, you can partition your drive, which, you know, all of this stuff is something that would, you can't do normally. So this is an interactive shell, essentially, where you can manipulate your HFS file system, which I think is kind of a fancy way of just saying, like, it's like parted, except it has it for HFS, but presumably they've done all of that through like TCLSH, because that's linked against libtcl. There's XFS, which is the part that uses TK, the TK widgets. This is a graphical interface for manipulating HFS volumes. So in a way, you could think of this maybe as like Gparted. I mean, I don't believe that it's quite as featureful as Gparted, but I mean, it's you know, important. I mean, I don't have an HFS volume to test any of this stuff on, so I'm using really, really vague memories here. But it, you know, this is the all important, like, you know, a person wants to be able to do something with HFS, but doesn't want to have to learn the interactive HFSSH shell to do all of those things. This is where TCLTK comes in really, really handy. You can just have XHFS, the graphical version of the HFS partitioning tool or formatting tool, whatever it's called, and there it is. They have access to that. Now it's completely, you know, it doesn't have a fancy theme. It looks very much like a traditional TK application, so it's not beautiful, but it's functional. I'm assuming it works. I've always had good experience with HFS to the extent that I can. I've had good experiences with HFS support on Linux. That's not always entirely possible. I mean, there are things on HFS that just aren't available to other systems. So it's not a pleasant experience really at the best of times. But in terms of the tooling around HFS on Linux, I've never really been able to complain. So yeah, I think HFS utils is really nice. It used to be one of those things that I installed all the time because I did deal with HFS volumes a lot from other people or from historical stuff out of a closet for myself. Since then, it's just I've migrated long ago to EXT4 or to XFS or JFS, whatever. And so I just don't have to deal with HFS anymore. But this is an important package. It is probably getting a little bit long in the tooth now because even if Mac does use HFS Plus these days, and even if this does work with HFS Plus, although it doesn't say it does, then I just feel like HFS is starting to show its age in lots of use cases, and I don't think there are lots of use cases for it anymore. So I think that this is very much kind of a legacy kind of support application, but those are important. That's why we like Linux and open source, because it does keep an eye on legacy support, which is great. So that's everything. That's everything in the TCL directory. Next time, we will start the X directory, which, as the name of the directory implies, is a bunch of stuff that is at least linked to the X11 graphic library set. Or at least that's what the directory claims. We'll find out more next time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi. My email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening, and keep the source open.
Me, I must still put my faith in the electronic brain.